Hi, this is the very first Beyond the Byline podcast brought to you by News24. It's produced by AdSpace Studio, which is News24's commercial content arm. And the reason that you're hearing from me, Jerusha Rath, and not one of our journalists from the newsroom today is because Beyond the Byline is all about getting beyond the byline. We want to talk to the journalists and editors in our newsroom about themselves. They spend all their time telling stories on behalf of us, but who tells their stories? That's what we're doing in this series. And in our very first podcast episode, we're speaking to Herman Ilof. He's the lifestyle editor for News24. He's got so many cool things to say to us. Hi, Herman.
Hey, Jerusha. So it's so nice to catch up with you again. We haven't seen each other in a while.
We haven't. We actually know each other IRL, which is pretty cool. But for those who don't know you in real life, tell us a little bit just about who you are.
Yeah, it's always weird to be on this side of the mic, having to answer the questions. Not used to it, but...
Do you know, all of the journalists that we're speaking to are saying the exact same thing, and for every question we ask them, they ask us like 10 back.
So, a little bit about me. I am the lifestyle editor at News24. I always say I look after all the good, feel-good news at News24 because it's all about balance in life. I live in Cape Town. And I am a big fan of Formula One, which I discovered 3 years ago through a Netflix series called Drive to Survive. And yes, I know the original OG F1 fans are rolling their eyes right now, but our new F1 newbies are into this. So yeah, that's me.
You are like the fourth person to tell me to watch Drive to Survive. I just need to go and do it.
It's life-changing because it explains everything so well. And I think that's it. We're going to talk about journalism today. And if you want to see an example of how to bring somebody into something in a brilliant narrative, that's a show to watch.
Hi, man. We're going to talk about everything today, from mental health issues in the newsroom to LGBTQI+ representation. But before we get too serious, we have a game for you. And those who don't know you probably don't know that you're kind of competitive.
I would say that, yeah. I've never lost.
Okay. So our very sneaky producers, Tando and Greya, have put together a series of, I'm going to say, nearly impossible sounds. We're going to play them for you, and you're going to tell us what you think they are.
Okay.
All right, are you ready?
I'm prepared.
Sound one. Here it is.
Was that
whoa? All right. I think those were all the sounds. All of them.
Somebody's eating their teams.
Let's hear it again. So now, Herman, you've got to.
Yeah.
I don't know. Think. Write. Yeah, type. Yeah. How many sounds can you identify?
Oh, okay. Closing my eyes. Nine. Is that nine? The first one and the last one sound the same.
Let's give you one more shot, one more listen, and then we'll tell you what's what.
Yeah. I got nine again. Am I right?
All right, let's hear it. There are 10 sounds,
that's 10
pretty
sounds.
Impressive. Yeah.
The first one is a bite out of something.
I'll give it to you.
Yeah. There was a slurp of coffee somewhere.
Oh my gosh, spot on. 2 out of 10.
There was Is it, was it Skype? Is it a Skype call? Is it there?
No.
Zoom call.
No, come on, we use it every day.
Teams.
It was a Teams. I'm pretty sure it was Teams.
Teams call. Yeah. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Fingers tapping on a table.
Wow, yes.
Typing.
You're 4 out of 10. Yes.
Door opening? A door screeching. Something with a door. No. Floor? Oh, a wooden floor.
Kind of close.
A drawer. Opening a drawer.
Almost.
And that's what I've got.
No, it's not bad. I'd say you've got 6 out of 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not bad.
We were listening to a squeaky chair, and that's
okay. Yeah.
A printer. When was the last time you printed anything? Exactly.
Pre-pandemic, definitely.
Yeah, pre-COVID. That annoying colleague who's drinking something, slurping something. That you got that one. Somebody crunching on chips really loudly. Yeah. A loud kicking pen.
Oh yes, the pen. I heard the beck.
Typing,
got it.
Tapping on a table. A heavy breather.
Oh.
We all work with one of those. And a Teams call.
Huh?
Not bad.
Not bad.
I mean, in your defense, seriously, when was the last time somebody printed anything? Right. I'm going to give that one to you.
I don't actually, my laptop is not even connected to the printer anymore.
No, it's mine. In fact, IT emailed me the other day and they were like, hey, we need to set you up to the printer. And I just mailed back to say, but why? Why? But let's throw it back to the days where we did print stuff. Mm. And that's when we started our careers as young, scrappy journalists. Mm. You started out... in fact, I'm going to let you tell the story because you are currently the lifestyle editor, but you started out in a very small town on a completely different beat.
Absolutely. I started out my career at a community newspaper in Potchefstroom called the Potchefstroom Herald. I believe like community newspapers are a brilliant place to start a career as a journalist because basically... you have to do everything. You have to go write your story, sub your story, do the layout for your story, do the own photos and captions for your story, and sometimes you even have to do the posters on the lampposts. So I started out as a crime reporter at the Potchefstroom Herald, and for 2 years I ran a beat that was pretty hardcore. That would take you right into the thick of things. I learned how to build contacts with people in the industry and kind of built my career from there. And after 2 years of doing crime reporting, I felt ready to move to the big city. I wanted to expand my career a bit. And back then, they had an Afrikaans version of News 24. It was called Nuus 24, and it was basically like a
back in the day.
It was like a translated version of News 24, and that was before the time of Netwerk 24. I applied for the job in at Nuus 24 and got it and moved to Cape Town with my little red Golf and my spaniel, and I didn't know anybody here, and kind of had to start my career in Cape Town in the digital sphere. So back then, digital was it was a speckle in our industry. It was where stuff would go that there wasn't space for in print. I was kind of, in the stepchild part of the industry back then. And looking back now, that was brilliant because I got to grow up with online publishing as it grew and as it got bigger and as it expanded. When you when you are with something from the origin and you grow with it, there's a kind of in-depth knowledge and kind of head start that you get. And through that, I moved on to be the digital editor at Hastings at Drum. I went after that. I was the online editor at Channel 24, which is South Africa's largest entertainment news platform. And then I moved over to News 24's lifestyle division, where I'm currently at. I look after, like I said earlier, all the feel-good news on News 24, everything that enriches life, be it entertainment, books, health-related issues, motoring. Those sections all fall under me.
I mean, honestly, Havan, you and I have been with Media 24 for so long now, they might as well put a ring on it.
Absolutely,
you know?
Absolutely. 15 years this year for me.
Gosh, yeah, I'm on, what are we, 2022? I'm on 12 years.
Wow. Yeah.
Ishmet Davidson, if you're listening to this, Harman and I need a big sparkly diamond. One each.
Yes. Please, Ishmet. Oh, I'm going to find him in the left and he's going to kill me for this.
Harman, the cool thing about this is that 15 years ago, you could have never envisioned this career that you've plotted for yourself. But that's really the beauty of journalism, digital journalism at the moment, that the possibilities are just completely endless. And in addition to that, you've managed to foster a culture and a real workplace environment that is inclusive and happy. And that's not something that I think many people could have said of their newsroom environment 15 years ago.
Absolutely, Jerica. It's the newsroom, the modern newsroom, is a very different place to the old newsroom. I remember, I wonder if I can say this. I remember when I was the crime reporter. Obviously, I smoked back then because, like, all crime reporters smoke, you know.
Obviously. And did you have a little bottle of whiskey in your top drawer? Listen, because apparently
So we used to smoke in the archive room, which is just like.
So horrible
to admit at this, but back then it wasn't frowned upon, you know. We had like this little building anyway. And today, if I look at the newsroom today, it's just this, and we're here in the mothership, as I like to call her, the beautiful Media 24 building in Cape Town. And it's a modern newsroom, and actually, I was talking to somebody the other day that just joined our newsroom, and they said, this is actually a very young team. This is a very young newsroom, and I looked around and I realized that that's true. This newsroom is the young generation, the digital savvy kind of, you know, age of journalism where... I'm 37 and I get to be an editor of one of the biggest news platform in South Africa, the lifestyle section, and I have a huge team that I can get to work with, and the dynamic is very different because I don't want to tell them what to do. I want them to tell me what's happening and what it is that they want to do, because at the end of the day, that's going to deliver the best product.
You're listening to the Beyond the Byline podcast, and we're speaking to Harman Iloff, who's the lifestyle editor at News 24. Harman, you spoke to us about the move to the big city, to Cape Town, from Potch, which was, in addition to being completely transformative to your career, it was transformative to your personal life too. But I want you to tell that story. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah. So to give the listeners or listener, maybe, I don't know how many people are going to tune in.
Both of our mothers are listening.
Mom.
Yeah.
I grew up very conservative, in a very conservative Christian household. So, you know, being gay was not, it wasn't even an option. It wasn't something that I could be. And I was one of those kids that really just wanted to please everybody and wanted to, you know, be the best in academics, be the best in, you know, sing in the choir, do everything that I needed to do. I had to be the best. Win a debate, you know, that type of thing. So I didn't want to disappoint anybody when I started realizing that, you know, I'm not so sure about my sexuality. So I kept it under wraps for a long time, even while I studied. I studied in Potch at the Northwest University. Back then it was called the Potchefstroom University for Christian Higher Education. So, yeah, I mean, a great campus, great university. But I was very much in the closet. But when I moved to Cape Town, I didn't know anybody here. And there was an opportunity for me to really just embrace who I am, to really just be myself, and to introduce myself to new people as the most authentic me that I could possibly be. And I came out as gay in my mid-20s, about 10 years ago now. And when I came out, it wasn't like, here I am, I'm gay. I was still very much shy about it. I was still very much aware of people's perceptions of the LGBTQ community, and I was scared, to be honest. So I kind of just kept it to myself. I remember telling people, like, oh, my sexuality is nobody's business. And that's fine. I think that's also a choice that you have. But now, 10 years later, I have realized the power of embracing my sexuality, of being an out and proud queer person, and being there so that the young Hadman who is in high school and is not sure about what he's going through, do you see somebody who is working in a national newsroom and can just be openly gay and be accepted and be part of a normal newsroom without it having to be an issue? So yeah, that's what Cape Town did for me. And the move here.
I mean, there are two sides to this, right? Mm. Because on the one hand, you are able now to create an incredible environment for young people to come in and live their truth and be themselves, which is something that 15 years ago you might not necessarily, well, actually you wouldn't have had.
No.
But on the other hand, it also gives you an incredible perspective to tell South Africans stories, because that's what you and your teams do day in and day out. You grapple with stuff that's sometimes heavy and sometimes joyful and sometimes complicated and sometimes funny. But now you're able to do that from a different perspective too, which is so important, right? We really can't just have straight white men telling the stories of our entire country. But you fostered a newsroom where that's not the case at all, and that must be so cool.
I'm extremely privileged to be able to be in this position where I had the opportunity to put together a team that could be so diverse, that could have different perspectives on life, that could bring something from every point of view. I have to acknowledge and be aware of the fact that I have a privilege as a white male, and what do I do with that? I'm not going to turn that into something that's a guilt that I carry with me, or something that I feel I should hide and not accept. I think embrace it and then turn it into the power to bring the change that we need, to create the opportunities, to give people a chance, to to give people a platform to be able to tell their stories. If there's a story about somebody who's transgender, I want somebody in the newsroom who can understand that, who can talk to me about that, who can share an authentic perspective that I, as a gay male, don't have. So diversity in the newsroom, in every form, is so important for me, and I really hope that I just get to expand on this more and more as our newsroom grows.
Yeah, you will. I know you will. We mentioned just in passing when we started that I have the privilege of knowing you. I've known you for many years. We've worked together in the newsroom.
Yeah.
And I guess if somebody asked me, like, tell me something about Harman, I think the thing that really has struck me and continues to stay with me about you for all the years I've known you is that you are one of the few people who can handle complexity with grace, and I see that in your work and in your personal life, that on any given day you deal with so many different people, you deal with different beats, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've got a health editor reporting into you, entertainment editor, you deal with cycling, you deal with books, you deal with a lot of different beats professionally. But on a personal level, in your personal life, I just find your capacity to hold both beauty and heartache together. Just, you know, it's really striking to me. You can handle complexity with grace. That's what I'd say about you.
That is, I think that's the kindest thing anybody has ever said to me, and it really means a lot. Thank you.
It's true.
I think the thing for me is, if we're going through, and we as a country, we as a collective, we're going through hectic stuff, and it feels like it's just piling up, and sometimes we go into this survival mode, and I think the thing for me is to have that moment of being present, where I can just understand what is happening right now. In other words, if I have to run a newsroom in a day with different content coming in, being present in that moment and knowing that, okay, this is my end goal, this is where I want to go, I want to put out quality lifestyle news, and then going to the experts. I don't see myself as a lifestyle expert. I mean, that's why I have somebody like Sean, who's the books editor, and Lance is the cycling editor, and just tapping into their expertise and then bringing it into the News24 environment, where we can then give it to the audience in a way that it seems effortless, almost. We can do more when we tap into the expertise and the strong points of the people around us, and that is what brings us the balance. That's the thing at the end of the day that helps us to get through it, because we'll never be able to do it on our own, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think coming, you know, out of the pandemic when we were forced to be isolated for so long, it's so good to start slowly rebuilding these communities around us. And I'm finding that particularly powerful myself. You know, Harman, again, going back to this grace and complexity theme that I feel is very fitting to you, you know, another example outside of your professional life is in your being quite outspoken about managing your own mental health.
Yes.
And something that I believe you feel quite strongly about. So Do you want to chat to us a bit about that?
Yes, absolutely. With something like my sexuality, you know, when you suppress something for that long and you kind of deny yourself the opportunity to truly be who you are, it causes complexities in your inner self. There's a traumatic kind of experience that you go through pretending to be somebody else and never being able to just fully embrace yourself. And with that comes mental health issues. And as a result of the fact that I, struggled with my sexuality and being open with it, I suffered greatly in my mental health until I decided that I need help. And again, it comes to that thing where I can't do this by myself. So I went to go see a psychiatrist, and she diagnosed me and was able to help me. She then put me on medication, and then I also see a psychologist. So with what I've been given is the tools to fight my battle with depression, because it's real. And something that I've realized is it's not something that you drink your meds in the morning and it's gone. It's a constant battle. And the kind of freedom that I found with being able to talk openly about my sexuality has seeped into my ability to speak openly about my struggles with mental health and depression. I feel that by talking about depression and my own mental health issues, by sharing that I'm taking medicine to help me, that by saying, oh, I'm running out of the office, I'm going to my shrink, by normalizing it, by bringing it into the everyday, it takes away these stigmas that we have around it. It just is. This is not me name dropping, but I interviewed Taika Waititi this week. He's the,
You are allowed to name drop that.
So Taika, the director of Thor Love and Thunder, that obviously this is the reason I interviewed him. And one of the things that really stood out for me in the film is that there's queer and gay characters in the film. But they never come out in a, oh, this is my big coming out moment, or here's the monologue about I'm a gay character in a Marvel movie. They just exist in this Marvel universe, and they are just accepted. So I spoke to Taika about it, and he said that for him, it was important to normalize it, to have all these people watch the film and see that these gay characters are just characters like all the other characters. They have their same battles, they have their same issues, and there's no need for them to have this coming out. If coming out can be something of the past, it will be the greatest day for me, because I think I feel like it's so difficult to have to come out and announce it. And I'm almost have to say that I had to come out with my depression as well. I had to tell people that I am depressed and that I'm dealing with it. And again, there's stigmas around that, and a society views it in a certain way. So the more I can talk about it, the more I can use platforms like this podcast, the more I can use News24's platform, the more I can normalize these topics and bring it into everyday conversations, the better it's going to be for everybody that is struggling with this quietly by themselves.
Yeah, that is so powerful. And I think mental health issues in the newsroom for a long time were ignored, right? Because journalists were supposed to have this persona of being tough, having it all together. And when you realize exactly what our reporters deal with on a day-to-day basis, and sometimes the online harassment and bullying that comes with putting yourself out there, sharing your story, putting yourself in video to report, it's really unacceptable. You know, I in a previous life worked with you in the newsroom and was a video reporter for a long time. And the types of things that people felt were acceptable to say, it was just disgusting.
Absolutely.
And having recently chatted to Karen Morn and Juanita Hunter in the newsroom, they're equally feeling the toll of just personal attacks and bullying online, which of course severely impacts you know, the mental health of our reporters. Hanwan, do you think that we are getting closer to a place of kindness online? I mean, what do you think?
I mean, that's the ultimate dream, to have that place where we have kindness. But even when I was asked to do this, this behind the Byline series, my first instinct was no, because I don't want to expose myself to what people are going to say online. You know, the kind of harassment that goes with that. I, in 2020, closed my Facebook account because I was getting death threats in my inbox for the content that I was writing. I think social media is a space where people can kind of throw this anonymous attacks at journalists, at people, at anyone really, and get away with it because they're doing it anonymously behind a blank profile kind of thing. And yes, I absolutely agree with you. There's, I have seen more dead people in my career than I think the average person will see in a lifetime. I've heard the most horrendous words hurled at me from people who feel like it's okay to tell somebody that I wish your mother killed you at birth. That is emails that come to your inbox, and to be aware of that. The other day we were in a session and we spoke about secondhand trauma. So if I pitch up on a scene where there was just an accident, obviously the people that were in the accident are experiencing this trauma. But I, as a bystander, somebody that comes onto the scene, I'm experiencing this secondhand. But that impact is still there. There's still stuff that I have to deal with. And that is why it is so important to have a newsroom where we can just open up this conversation. We have a session at News24 called the Monthly Check-In. And it is all the editors around the table, and we just talk about personal stuff. We mention one good thing and one bad thing in our life, and then we discuss it with each other. And I can't imagine that happening 10, 15 years ago. But we are there. We're getting there. We are listening, and we are improving, and we are learning. And I think, you know, as millennials move up and we get Gen Z coming in there, we are the generations who like to talk and who like to say what we feel. We don't just agree and go along with it. We want to understand it. I think that's important, understanding it, not just agreeing for the sake of agreeing.
You're listening to the Beyond the Byline podcast, and we're speaking to Hanwan Eloff, who's the lifestyle editor at News24. Yeah, let's stay here for a little bit for media leaders listening in on this podcast. I think that's a very powerful mechanism, a monthly check-in. So you say you do one thing positive, or something that's making you happy, something that's making you sad, and this is all, it's personal stuff. It's, it's got nothing to do with the diary or the news cycle.
No, and obviously a lot of our lives are influenced by the news and the news cycle, but you know, we have our daily diary every morning at 9:30 to 10:30, where we just sit and discuss the news. That's an hour of being exposed to everything that is happening. And that is a lot of secondhand trauma. And then we have this session where we can go and sit and we can be like, yeah, I'm not feeling this good. I mean, it was indeed one of these check-in sessions where I was like, I'm actually going on medication now, because I've reached that point where it helps me. And I'm not shy about talking about that. And I mean, and a kudos here to Adrian Basson, our editor-in-chief, who has created a newsroom where we are able, I am able to say to him that I am going through something that is a depressive episode, and him understanding it, and him telling me to take the time to look after myself, not saying just like, you know, work through it. He really cares and follows up and makes sure you're okay. And that is what we need in the modern newsroom.
Yeah, I think the message that I really want to highlight here is that this newsroom is not a magical unicorn. Mm. You can create it for your team. Mm. You can create safe spaces for journalists. Or for anybody experiencing a career with secondhand trauma, you know, it can be a place that is kind and collaborative and humane, where we care about our people.
Exactly. And I think this this kind of idea that the newsroom has to be all like, you know, shut up and just do it and get your things out and run. And I think that's something that maybe exists in the movies. But these days, I think there's a lot more value in looking after the people that are in your team, because if they're happy, they're going to produce the best work that they can produce because they are thriving. And that's your job as well as the editor or the manager. You have to make sure that your team is okay. And if they're not, you have to help them to get there.
Absolutely. Now I want to talk about Taika. You've actually been so blessed in your career. Mm-hmm. You've been able to travel and you've been able to speak to some pretty impressive people. The latest of whom is Taika Waititi. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm obsessed with him. I think everyone's obsessed with him at the moment. Was he among your favorite interviews, or who was your favorite interview? Tell us.
It's always difficult to kind of select your favorite, but I mean, Taika was absolutely amazing. I walked out of my interview and I felt like I was floating for a bit, just like pure joy. He is a absolute gentleman. He is the kindest guy. We were actually talking about, like I said, the LGBTQ issue, and my time was running up because you have very limited time when you speak to these high profile celebrities. And he was like, don't worry, I'm going to take my time and we're going to finish this conversation. And I appreciated that so much, because I wasn't just another journalist in the queue that he quickly wanted to talk about. There was a topic that was of interest to him and he really wanted to give me a great answer. But I think, you know, what stands out is my first interview ever. Not my first interview ever, but my first ever big interview was with Jennifer Aniston. And I met her in London for the...
Oh, casual hat, just, you know.
When I flew to London back then, we could fly to all over the world. I don't know if you remember that line.
Vaguely.
So, yeah, I went to London. It was a horrible boss. This was the flick she was in. And I met her in real life. And I just kept trying to keep my cool. We did the interview, and then at the end of the interview, I was like, this was my first time. And she was like, what? This was your... And she literally grabbed me by both hands. I'll never forget it. And she's like, you did so good. And I melted. And in that moment, I stood up and I hit my head on the lights that were set up above me. And she was like, oh my God, are you okay? And I was just... red in the face, but it was, again, you see these people on TV and you kind of think about them and like imagine what it's like meeting them, and you do, and they're always just people like us, I find, and I've, touch wood, never had to encounter anybody that was not what I expected them to be. So, I'm lucky.
That is the best Jennifer Aniston story ever.
I know, right? And I'm like the biggest Friends fan. And
I know.
And I meet Jennifer Aniston. I was insane.
Let's wrap this up, because you and I are just going to talk for like 5 hours.
Oh, yeah.
And,
absolutely.
And then our producers are going to yell at us. But I want to hear a little bit about Harman's bucket list. Let's do the person that you want to interview, the place that you want to go, and the thing that you want to experience. So the person you want to interview.
Okay, that's so easy. I think you can answer that one.
Wait. Can I get 5,000 rand if the answer is Jake Gyllenhaal?
I mean,
why Jake?
I just think that Jake Gyllenhaal, like, I've got so much respect for him as an actor. I think his career and his filmography is absolutely amazing. He makes great choices. Sure, there was one that we shall not name that wasn't maybe the best choice, but I think he's so great at the films he chooses, the roles he takes on, and I just think he's like a cool guy. I'm a little bit obsessed with him. So if I ever get...
I only realized or found out recently that he can sing.
Yes,
too.
Yes, he did Broadway. He is a legit stage and theater actor as well. Yeah, so definitely Jake Gyllenhaal is who I would like to interview. Where I'd like to go is Morocco. I would love to go to Morocco. I think it's one of those destinations where you can... I love the beauty of it. It's kind of a minimalist beauty. I do love minimalism. And I feel like... I don't know. It's something that I feel like I need to go to. It's calling me. I think I need a few nights in the desert in a tent. That'd be amazing.
Make it happen.
I'm
going to
make
it
happen. I'm going to make it happen. Mm. And the one thing I would like to experience... like you say, I've been really, really lucky to have a career that takes me all over the world. And I have to tell you about this. So I did a story for Traveler 24 where I got to go to Las Vegas. So if you had to tell me I had to do any place in the world, Las Vegas would never be on my bucket list. But I had the most amazing time in Las Vegas. So we arrived, we were driven around in a limo, we stayed at the Bellagio.
Oh man, that is cool.
We took a helicopter ride into the Grand Canyon and had lunch there, and then flew back over Las Vegas, and I'll never forget the song that was playing in the helicopter was "Viva Las Vegas" by Elvis Presley, and that was just one of those moments. So I'd love to experience something like that again, where I am completely and utterly surprised by something that I never expected I'd want to do. So I'm putting that out in the universe. If it can send me a surprise, I would love that.
Do you know what mine is? And I just feel like it would be totally wasted on my husband, bless him, but not wasted on you, so we should totally do it together.
Okay.
I want to go and see the Rockettes at Christmas time at, what is it, Radio City Hall in New York?
Yes.
Can you even fathom it, Harman?
Jerisha, I'm in. We're gonna go.
We need to make this happen. Just think about it.
Yeah.
Like the huge tree at Rockefeller Center, all lit up.
Yeah.
And then we go and we watch the most precise dancers kill it on stage to Christmas music. That is my dream. That is heaven to me.
We'll make it happen.
Good. It's a date. Maybe Ishmet can send it.
Yes, Ishmet. If you're still listening, I think he stopped halfway through. I doubt he's still listening.
He stopped. For those of you wondering, Ishmet is the CEO of Media 24. So Harman and I are potentially in big trouble after this.
He's cool. He's not too bad.
Nah, he's great. This was the Beyond the Byline podcast with Harman Yeloff. Harman, thank you so much for joining us. I'm just so grateful.
Teresa, I'm so happy I got to spend an hour with you. Thank you. And send my love there.
I will. I'm in Joburg. You're in Cape Town.
Yes.
But hopefully we get to see each other soon.
We will.
Okay, bye.
Bye, guys.